All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you, and good morning, everyone. And thank you for joining the March HITECH meeting. I'm Mike Beery with ONC, and I'm very excited to kick off our meeting today. First, I would like to welcome ONC's executive leadership team to the meeting. And with us today, our national coordinator, Mickey Tripathi, Steve Posnack, our deputy national coordinator, Elise Sweeney-Anthony, the executive director of the Office of Policy, and Avinash Shambag, the acting executive director of the Office of Technology. And I will now call the meeting to order and start with roll call. Aaron Meary.
Here. Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Present. Good morning.
Amy Abernathy.
Good morning. Here.
Michael Adcock.
Present.
James Elzey.
Present.
Cynthia Fisher.
Good morning. Present.
Lisa Fry.
I'm here. Good morning.
Valerie Gray.
Good morning.
Adi Gunlapalli.
Good morning. Yes. Thank you.
Stephen Hester is not with us today. He has a conflict and won't be joining us. Jim Gerges.
Present.
John Kansky. Ken Kawamoto. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Les Leonard.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald.
Good to hear. Good morning.
And I believe John Scott is alternating for Jonathan Nebaker. John Scott. Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
James Pantelis.
Good morning.
Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Raj Watwani.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Michelle Schreiber.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott.
Good morning.
Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Robert Waugh. Great. Thank you, everyone. And Mickey Tripathi has now joined us. And so now please join me in welcoming Mickey for his opening remarks.
Great. Good morning, everyone. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Really look forward to the meeting today. I just have a few brief remarks so we can get us back on schedule. Just want to give a couple of updates on the work that we're doing here at ONC, and then I'll turn it over to Aaron and Denise for the rest of the agenda. First, just wanted to give an update on, I think as I described last time, we're certainly highest priority for the ONC as well as all federal agencies is the COVID response. I'm really, really happy to report that we've had, sort of excellent and ongoing relationships with other federal agencies in, working on things that cut across federal agencies related to interoperability and things related to the COVID response. Working very closely and collaboratively with the White House COVID Response Coordinators team, as well as the U.S. Civil Services, and of course, our HHS partner agencies, who we have a deeper relationship with and working with, in very close partnership. One in particular is work that we're working closely with per an executive order with the CDC on public health data systems and looking at interoperability of public health data systems, both in the present as well as, sort of thinking about the future there. So I'm really excited about that work that we're getting started, as I said, in very close partnership with the CDC. And in particular, as it relates to the HITECH, I think, one of the things that we're going to be working on and looking to the HITECH for is to be, sort of a key conduit of industry input into that process. We're still working on exactly how that would work. Would that mean, maybe be a hearing, a HITECH hearing, or an existing task force, or you know, perhaps the need for a new task force, something like that, that we'll work with the HITECH leadership on. But just want to let you know that work is getting underway, and we see the HITECH as being a really important sort of vehicle for us to be able to get industry input along the way for that process. Of course, we have non-COVID aspects of our work that continue, so we want to make sure that everyone knows that continues and that doesn't slow down at all. A couple of things I would just point to is, you know, again, we continue to prepare for and are excited about the April 5th applicability date of information blocking rule. We've, you know, been working a lot on outreach, on education, working with industry partners to, you know, continue the outreach and the education to support that and to support all stakeholders in that. We have a number of FAQs in the pipeline that will hopefully be released next week as well to help better inform and answer questions that we've been getting. So that continues apace. The other thing I would just point to is, you know, something that's normally, you know, a little bit small, but I think it's really important, in the broader scheme of things, which is the applicability date of the new standards in the standards version advancement process. The applicability date is March 12th for those new standards. And we had an announcement on January 12th that's on the website of which those standards are. It's related to clinical quality measures, related to view, download, transmit to third-party apps. And then there's one related to public health data, public health and healthcare surveys in particular, with specifications in that area. And as many of you may know, the standards version advancement process is not required, but it's a sub-regulatory way of allowing health IT developers that have certified systems through the ONC certified program to be able to continue to update with new versions of standards that have already been approved by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And the reason I mention this is, again, it's sort of a small thing in a, you know, sort of a portfolio of many things, but this is one of the soft levers that, you know, that ONC has and has been working with industry on to, you know, to say, how do we have, you know, sort of, we always have the, you know, the hard levers of regulations that, you know, all of you are familiar with, but we also, with feedback from industry, have always wanted to have a set of soft levers as well that can give a roadmap to industry, can allow people to move forward and for us to continue to move forward as an industry without everyone waiting until the regulation or the next regulation or when the applicability date of a regulation comes into play. So, over the next few years, spend a lot of time thinking about those soft levers and how we can work with industry to help encourage industry to keep moving forward, so that all of us can achieve what we want to achieve, which is, you know, better and broader health IT interoperability. The last thing before I turn it over to Aaron Denise is I just wanted to, you know, on a personal note, thank Terry O'Malley, who I know has, spent over 3 years on the HITECH, and I think this is going to be his last meeting. Just want to thank him for all the, you know, great work that he's done. I've known Terry actually from Massachusetts, the fantastic work that Terry, that you did with the LTPAC community. I know you did a lot of things, but where you and I intersected was the work that you were doing with the LTPAC community in central Massachusetts, as well as work on measuring interoperability. And, you know, really always learned a lot from you, and I know the HITECH learned a lot from you as well. And all of your contributions here with, the USCDI Task Force and the Interoperability Standards Priority Task Force are, you know, very much appreciated. And wish you good luck and thank you again for your time here, and hope that, we can still call on you from time to time to get your wisdom and advice on occasion. But just wanted to, you know, thank you again. I know the GAO, while Terry is irreplaceable, the GAO does plan, I think, to have a replacement, but probably not until January 2022 is our understanding right now. So anyway, thank you very much, Terry. Let me turn it over to Aaron and Denise now.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mickey. Appreciate the comments. And welcome, everybody, to the March HITECH. A lot has happened since the February HITECH. I do want to open up real quickly, though, and say on behalf of the state of Texas, thank you to the entire ONC team and the administration for the rapid response, helping us get through the weather event that we had here a few weeks ago. And then, of course, I can tell you that from a first-person perspective, the fact that we are a vaccine hub here in Central Texas, the amount of vaccine and the coordination has been remarkable. And just yesterday, UT saw over 2,500 individuals in the single day to vaccinate and accelerating fast higher and higher as more vaccine is available. So thank you for that, Mickey. I think it echoes some of the comments you made about the constant coordination across the federal government and how we are seeing that translated on the front lines. I also want to welcome all of you that are listening in today. I think we're going to be going through some great topics, and our task forces have some fantastic updates for you on what work they've been doing. Needless to say, we do all of this on top of vaccine delivery and our normal care every day as provider organizations or vendors and whatnot. And so we appreciate the community listening as we also look forward and lean forward into exactly what Mickey mentioned with interoperability and so forth and so on. Denise, anything you want to add?
Oh, no, just to say good morning. And we have a short agenda today. And again, apologies for getting started late. We had some technical issues. I think, Aaron, you can go ahead and go over the agenda, and then I'll call for approval of the minutes.
Absolutely. So let's go through the agenda today. So first, we are going to be working through the U.S. CDI task force update and getting some good stuff there. Then we're going to be speaking with the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force and getting an update there. After that, we'll do a quick data brief from the ONC around the use of certified health IT and methods to enable interoperability by non-federal acute care hospitals. And then, of course, public comment and then our final remarks, and we'll adjourn for the day. So as Denise said, it's a little bit of a shorter meeting today, but it's going to be action-packed, as you already saw from this morning, a little kerfuffle with audio issues. And we'll get this thing back on track into goal. All right. So let me turn it over to you.
All right.
So we can do the approval of the minutes.
All right. So hopefully everybody took a look at the February 10th minutes. And if I could get a motion for approval of those minutes.
So
I'll make the motion. This is Michael Adcock.
All right. And a second.
My second, Truscott.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All right, any noes? Any abstentions? Okay, meeting minutes are approved. All right, so we are going to start off with our U.S. CDI Task Force update, and we'll turn it over to Stephen and Leslie.
Hey, Denise, excuse me, this is Mike. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to let people know that Terry corrected the record with us this morning right before the call to let us know that he's just stepping down from the U.S. CDI Task Force co-chair responsibilities. He's actually not stepping down from the high-tech after all, so that was a miscommunication, and we just wanted to let everybody know that Terry's staying with us on the high-tech, and we welcome his continued achievements on the high tech and all of his great suggestions along the way. And Terry, I just wanted to open up, let you say a few words if you'd like to.
Oh, thanks. I should leave more often. Thank you, Mickey, for your
great news. I was able to convince you to stay.
My preference to have stayed on the U.S. CDI task force, but I have some caregiving responsibilities at home that have made that impossible, I'm afraid. But we'll stick out my term to the end of the year, and thank you again. And I'm just so pleased Stephen and Leslie Kelly Hall are carrying on U.S. CDI. Can't imagine two better people to do it. So thank you.
Thank you, Terry. All right, Denise, Aaron, turn it back to you. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, Stephen and Leslie, you're up.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Terry, for all of your fine work on the U.S. CDI Task Force, both of the earlier iterations. We are now into the third iteration of this task force and focusing this year on the version 2 and helping to get that out the door and then helping the ONC team to prepare for the version 3 process, and we'll talk more about that. But before we get into the content, I do want to introduce you all to Leslie Kelly Hall, who has been an active member in the health IT and the interoperability community for a number of years. Leslie represents the patient and caregiver perspective primarily, but really has a deep understanding of the underlying technology and infrastructure that we all use for interoperability. As she tells me, this is actually her first visit to the HITECH. So for those of you who don't know her, you're going to get to do that through this process, and you will likely love her as much as I do. Leslie, you want to just introduce yourself briefly?
Sure. Thanks, Stephen. And it's great to see so many familiar faces and to be part of this this great work that you guys continue to do. So I won't take up any more time with my background, except that I'm a former CIO and chief marketing officer and converted to patient advocacy for health information technology as I saw how much access to medical records changed patients' lives. And so I continue to do that work and am honored to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. So we're going to jump in on the next slide. We're going to talk about our committee, our task force, who's on it, what we're trying to get done, what we've gotten done so far, and what we're going to do next. So a pretty basic agenda. This is my third trip around the sun on this task force. I worked closely with Christina Carvalho and Terry O'Malley on the first two iterations, and I'm really honored to be able to help co-chair at this time. On the next slide, we have our roster of participants. Many of these names will be familiar to you. Many of these names are you. So we have great participation both from HITECH members as well as from members of the public who have been involved in prior task force work. We have a great representation from providers, from payers, from health IT developers, a couple of very strong folks representing the patient and caregiver perspective, as well as standards development organizations. So I think we really have a great group, and I thank all of you, including our HITECH co-chairs, for participating in this important task force. On the next slide, you can see we've had quite a number of meetings over the past month or so. We just dug right in to this project, and we'll continue to meet weekly for the foreseeable future because there really is a lot of work to be done here. On the next slide, you will see a representation of the draft US CDI version 2. This is really the primary focus of the work that our task force has undertaken. You will see with designated with stars the new data classes and elements that have been added since the version 1, which I think we're all quite familiar with. You can see it was a very modest proposed advancement of the US CDI with some additional data elements under care team, some additional data elements for diagnostic imaging and counter type and problems. There are also two new data classes that have been introduced, the diagnostic imaging class, as well as the encounter information class. So we'll touch on those a little bit more. But really, when you think about it, this came out earlier this year, this draft, I think, was received by the industry as really a modest change. And there are people who thought that was terrific in the context of COVID and very appropriate for this point in history. And there are people who felt that maybe it didn't go far enough. I haven't heard anybody say that it went too far. So I think we're mostly either embracing or concerned about the modesty of the proposal. On the next slide, you will see a timeline, which represents really the cyclical annual process that ONC has put together to advance the US CDI. And I'll just take a moment to say, one of the things that the task force has spent a lot of time talking about is really what is the role of US CDI in the larger ecosystem that is health IT and especially interoperability. Because obviously a number of federal regulations from both ONC and CMS, point to the US CDI, but it's also being used by other actors in the industry. So I think that as we get into this annual cadence of review and update, I think one of the really key questions is, you know, what role does this play in our industry? What are the parameters? We've had a lot of discussion about that, and thankfully the ONC team has been just marvelously engaged in these discussions. I think that our task force is informing their thinking, and I anticipate that we'll all see, you know, greater clarification coming out, perhaps in the context of the publication of version 2 later this year, but certainly going forward. So we are in this cycle in sort of the early 2021 here in that red and blue box where the draft version 2 has been prepared and published and is now out for public comment, as well as analysis by the HITECH task force. So that's what we're in the midst of now. That process goes for another month till mid-April, at which time the public comment period will close, and our task force will come back here to the HITECH with our recommendations for you to consider for to then forward on to ONC. But truly, while we're going to do a good job putting together a clean report and make it look lovely, for all of you, I think that the process of providing comment and input to ONC is really very much in process, given the engagement that we have. At the same time, the website is open for people to make submissions for version 3. So all of the version 2 submissions, you know, were stopped at the end of October. Quite a number of submissions were made, recommendations for new classes, new elements, for changes to existing classes and elements. And now new submissions are coming in and they're being queued up for consideration for version 3. As you can see, after April and our discussion here, the ONC will be going over all of the comment that's come in, and then they'll be putting together the final version 2 for publication mid-year. Once that is published, it will be considered for inclusion in that standards version advancement process that Mickey mentioned earlier, which will make these new elements and classes and applicable standards available for developers to confidently go forward and implement in their systems. And then we get a little bit of a break until the fall when they will close the submission period for V3. During that time, our task force is going to be looking at the process. So right now we're looking at the content, making comments and suggestions related to the draft V2, and then we will be looking at the process and helping to inform that for the next cycle. So that's kind of where we are, and then the cycle repeats itself, and I would anticipate that our task force will repeat itself because we have that little red box coming up again next year, and presumably year by year until this model changes. On the next slide, we have the charges that were given by ONC to our task force. This was presented here. Since you've seen this, we've just added some numeration to these so that we can refer to them more easily than saying the second sub-bullet. So these are our charges as we see them today. We've also made some other modest adjustments, but the first focus that our task force has had is to look at the draft USCDI version 2, as I said, and provide recommendations. And this includes any recommendations related to version 1 that people may have, including the applicable standards and the proposal to update those standards to the latest terminology standards that are available. So we'll talk a bit about that. The second subcharge was to look at the new data classes and elements that were proposed for in the draft version 2 and see if ONC got those right or not and provide any input. And then our third task is to really look at the elements and classes that were leveled by ONC as level 2, that is to say, being ready to go, and to see whether or not more or fewer of those should be included in version 2 when it is published. So sounds simple. There's a lot of detail under that hood. And as I said, once we complete that work and bring this, our recommendations back to you next month, we will be focusing on the expansion process, making recommendations related to the OnDeck submission system, to the evaluation criteria and the process used to assign suggested items to different levels, and then the prioritization process used by ONC to select new classes and elements to be put into the next draft. And then also, we are going to go on from there and focus on suggested priorities related to the version 3 submission cycle. And I assure you that our task force members have lots of great ideas about what should be added to USCDI and why, as well as the public comment that we all see coming in, which is contributing as well. I will point out that public comment is received directly on the ONC website. People can post there with text and or attachments. The early task force co-chairs, with some help from Andy Truscott, did a pretty broad outreach to a number of stakeholders that we knew across the community, and have encouraged people to submit public comments. So a lot of that is coming in, and I think that the ONC is going to have plenty of ideas to chew on as they put together the final version 2. So I'm going to kind of pause there, Leslie, and invite you to chime in with anything you want to say about our process and scope so far.
Thanks, Stephen. No, I think you've nailed it. This is the work to be done, and it is a lively group and very, very interested and engaged. So we are constantly seeking ONC's help, which they're Johnny on the spot to give us, of making sure that we stay within the rails. But I do imagine we will drift a bit at some time and seek your guidance. So thank you very much.
So I'm going to go ahead and walk you through kind of the draft recommendations that we have so far, and these will focus on charges 1A and B. We are digging into 1C and intend to have that work done and ready to present to you next month, but that has not thus far been the focus. As Leslie said, we tend to drift into the 1C area pretty regularly, because people are so enthusiastic about supporting interoperability, but our focus has really been on version 1 and the draft version 2 proposal, as opposed to what might yet be added to that. So on the next slide, we have sort of some highlights from our discussions of task 1A, which was specifically to evaluate the version 1 data elements and the applicable vocabulary and content standards. This should be clear that we're not talking about transport standards or document standards. This has really been about the vocabulary standards that support the individual data classes and elements. And you will recall that when the USCDI was first envisioned, it was designed to include data classes and elements for which there are standards, where interoperability is going on. The USCDI was itself a modest advancement from the prior Common Clinical Dataset, so it really builds on historical work. So the first thing was that there was a set of new standards proposed to support each of some of the data elements, and the ONC proposed updates to those. We went through those in some detail, with a lot of expertise on the call, and really felt that the ONC had done a good job there. There was a comment that there might be some additional updates to some applicable standards. Specifically, LOINC is expected to have a new version published in June, and we do want to make sure that when the new version of USCDI comes out each year, that it contains all of the latest of applicable standards. So that was one point. Another change that you may recall from the earlier slide, I didn't pull it out, was that there were three of the clinical notes that were note types that were included in USCDI version 1 that have been reclassified into different or newly available data classes, and we'll talk more about that, and the group felt comfortable with that decision by ONC. There were specific suggestions about the need for further clarification of the scope and definitions related to the data class for diagnostic imaging, as well as the definition of the class for assessment and plan of treatment. We won't go into that in detail today, but I think it really represents the kind of deep thinking that people have. Assessment and plan of treatment, for example, you know, had a number of different applicable data elements that could go into it. And I think the group really is representing the fact that the industry has struggled to adopt the USCDI, especially as it's been such a key part of the information blocking regulation, which Mickey mentioned earlier. So I think people are really have become aware of how important it is to really nail these things down. So that was our Task 1A output. On the next slide, you can see a little bit about what happened. We had this list on the left of the 8 clinical note types that were included in USCDI version 1. And then what they've done is they've reclassified some of those note types. There's this new data class called diagnostic imaging, where the diagnostic imaging narrative clinical note type was put. And then there was an existing data class for laboratory data, and the narrative reports from laboratory and pathology were moved over there. This seems like a trivial reclassification, a little bit of a shell game, but it really engendered a lot of discussion about what is the role of the narrative portion of result reports, be they related to imaging or laboratory, and how to fit that into the grand scheme. But again, that was one of the changes that was proposed in draft version 2. On the next slide, a little bit about how we have tackled task 1B. Again, as I mentioned, this trying to understand the role of narrative in results. It ends up that whether you're talking about labs, pathology, imaging, those results can have both discrete data elements and narrative data elements. And I think most of us understand that those are both important. And there was a real concern that there not be a confusion about that. We did not want industry players to feel that they could just include the narrative and not the discrete elements. So the decision or the recommendation is being put forward to incorporate the narrative into the report and to clarify the scope of those reports as including the narrative as well as any and all available discrete elements, metadata, context, et cetera. The same is true for laboratory and pathology. The notion that the narrative is really part of a holistic report and it cannot be separated out. And we want that to be clear to industry that it needs to be included with other components of the result report. Another area that we've spent some time talking about, and I really attribute this to our strong representation from the patient and caregiver community, is that there was a desire to change the name of the provider name, the provider identifier, to call it a care team member name and identifier, acknowledging the fact that the care team often involves individuals who are not themselves professional providers, but really need to be captured as members of the care team and to have that information made available. So that it will be one of our recommendations back to you next month. And then a lot of discussion about encounter time. Encounter time was included in draft B2, and there's a real need for the vendors to understand what time are you talking about? Is it the time that it was scheduled? Is it the time the patient arrived? Is it the time the provider may have walked into the room or into the home? Was it the duration of the event? Are we talking about times for future events? So there are a lot of questions about that and a lot of suggestions regarding how ONC might be able to flesh that out going forward. So on the next slide, what we're doing now is we are finishing up, you know, any additional comments coming in related to the tasks 1A and B that we recommended, that we discussed. The next task that we'll be completing over this coming month will be task 1C, which is to say, looking at other elements that were leveled as level 2 that might appropriately be included in version 2 when it is finalized, and sort of struggling with that that Goldilocks question of how much is just enough to be included. We don't want too much, we don't want too little, and I think that, you know, whatever the ONC decides, there will be people with concerns on either side. After next month, we will be focusing in on our phase 2, looking at the USCDI expansion process and priorities for the version 3 submission cycle. And with that, I want to kind of turn it back to Leslie, because we really are interested, probably not today, but next month, we'd like to have a little bit more time on the HITACH agenda to really get your input and guidance as to how we're going to approach phase 2 and what direction we should be taking that. And Leslie, why don't you take the next slide?
Sure. I think as Stephen summarized, there is a lot of tension and great enthusiasm for setting aspirational direction and also very specific direction for USCDI. But we are struck by the differences of the stakeholders' demands. And sometimes these are competing needs. And yet, when we look at the genesis of USCDI, we can say, hey, it's to serve the patients, it's to serve the providers. And we would like to tee this discussion up because we do see great differences in prioritization based upon a priority of stakeholders served. So one area is the data underserved, like patients in public health, federally qualified health clinics, tribal nations. Then the providers themselves, who are probably the most data rich, the payers as well as CMS, and then regulatory bodies. We often get discussion about even competing needs and definitions within regulatory tasks and bodies. How does that get reconciled? And then, of course, the ever having a need for quality and safety and learning organizations. So as you can see, all of these are worthwhile and all of these are necessary. But as we get to data element level and class of services that we are tasked with, understanding the prioritization of these stakeholders would be important, as well as some guiding principles that have often come up in our discussions. So we hope to, in our next effort with you, is to tee up this question of stakeholder priority and also perhaps guiding principles as we come forward. And we're excited to have that guidance from you. And the reason we bring it up and tee it up now is because it's thoughtful and will require a good deal of thought and discussion. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Stephen.
Thank you, Leslie. And on our last slide simply is our plan for the coming month. We're going to cram in quite a number of meetings before we come back to you with our proposal next month. And then we'll finish it up on the last slide and open it up to questions.
It helps if I go off mute here. All right. Denise, I don't know if you can take this for the questions.
I don't currently see any hands up. Do we have any questions or any input for the USCDI task force? Oh, there we go. Steve Posnick.
Hey, thanks. This will be quick, so I won't try to fumble turning on the video. Thanks very much for the presentation and catch up as always. One of the things that would be helpful, and this is perhaps just experience passing along, you know, on the suggestion to change the naming of the term, I think has like the care team member one, could have corresponding data collection implications in terms of how that's interpreted by health IT developers. So as you all have those discussions, it would be super helpful and welcome to consider the interpretive ramifications of not just changing the term because it seems to resonate better with everybody, but what the actual data collection changes could result from, like a ripple effect perspective. So I just wanted to pass along. Those are often discussions that we have as well. It is an arduous process to pick terms for data elements that resonate with everybody. And, you know, every tweak to the naming conventions has impact.
No, thank you, Steve. I think that's very well-placed commentary, and certainly not something that that we have overlooked. You know, we do have great representation from vendors. We've got Clem, who always keeps us honest with regard to the impact this might have on providers and end users. And I've had that discussion, especially related to the fact that how you collect or can you collect an ID number to go along with a given member of the care team, and the need for the enumeration of care team members to have sufficient flexibility so that it can both, you know, meet the needs of really representing holistically the group of people who are caring for a patient while still capturing the depth of information that might be needed to support care coordination, communications between professionals, et cetera. So great feedback. I think we've got it. And your team is not, you know, they tell us pretty quickly when they feel like we're going off the rails or heading off into territory that's outside of our scope. But we will definitely keep that in mind and bring that back to the task force next week.
So next in the queue, Stephen, is Clem McDonald.
Clem. So I was wondering, and this is it with a nod to Terry O'Malley. He'd asked about wedging in some additional tests under the category of lab tests, and that didn't seem very doable. But we've heard some sparkles and rumors that it's possible that they might be passed in through some requirements for quality assurance CMS has. And I just wonder if that's progressing or not, and we get his dream content in that way. You know, give him a special gift for still being on the committee.
I mean, I'll respond, Clem, that CMS is represented on our task force. We reached out to them specifically when we were assembling the task force. So Michelle Schreiber has been participating very, very actively. CMS also, as with other government agencies, CDC and others, assembled a team to really dig deep into the draft V2 and to put together their public comment. CMS has been very thoughtful in that, and as you point out, they have a desire to see data elements that are important for their work be included in USCDI, a real interest in aligning the work of ONC and CMS within HHS, as Mickey mentioned earlier. And just yesterday, they actually posted their document of public comment to the website, so it's there for all of us to read. We are actually planning on assigning that to you as a task force member to read by our meeting next week, because we want to make sure that everybody's well aware of it. Having said that, the ONC has also reminded the task force that our job is not to necessarily review and sort through all of the other public comments. You'll recall from our timeline slide that there are two parallel processes of public comments coming in and HITAC task force comments coming in, but I think, you know, and our goal from the beginning was to incorporate feedback from other sources. But because CMS has posted those publicly, they are in the public record, and we can now consider those within the task force. But yeah, I think, again, as you say, there are a lot of folks who have aspirations to expand USCDI somewhat more quickly, not being quite so modest. And our task force is going to grapple with that over the coming month and try to come back with some suggestions that hopefully will represent a consensus among our group.
Well, CMS is sometimes described as the 800-pound gorilla, so I'm hopeful that their muscle will have some effect on this particular one.
All right, so we have Michelle Schreiber next in the queue.
Yeah, hi, thank you. So I am the representative from CMS, and I want to take a moment to thank Stephen as well as for Terry and Clem for thinking through some of the needs that we have. It is true that we would actually like to see a broader vision of the USCDI, but that is something that, you know, Stephen outlined very well, needs discussing. and that clearly there are elements that we need for quality measurement, and we outline those. But we also clearly recommend that there are a lot of asks for the USCDI, and this is a much broader conversation than what just CMS wants, although it's interesting being thought of as a gorilla. So thank you all.
You know, I will add, and I'll channel Al Taylor here a little bit, and maybe even invite him to chime in if he's on the call. You know, one of the real challenges has been to understand what is the USCDI. You know, what is its purpose? What is its role in our industry and in the ecosystem? Thus far, ONC has seen it really as a small piece, and not necessarily designed to replace other efforts. Other standards efforts like CCDA or FHIR, US Core, et cetera. Those efforts are meant to be supported by USCDI, as are many other efforts, you know, such as information blocking, exchange by payers under CMS, et cetera. So there's not a shared understanding that USCDI is meant to be all inclusive, but rather to represent the floor of just what data classes and elements must be supported when they are available to exchange. And I don't know, Al, are you on, and can you perhaps comment a bit?
Yeah, I am on. Thanks, Stephen. I think, you know, the way that you describe it as a floor is one way to think about it, but that has always been our intent. The key word of USCDI is core. So the most, you know, what is the most important, most valuable information that can be collected and exchanged related to patient data? And so the question is, how do we define it? How broadly or narrowly do we define core? And then how broadly or narrowly do we define interoperability, in fact, as far as the number of use cases of exchange sharing of information that's necessary or most important to, you know, across the entire enterprise. And we're working on that, working to see how we've defined it previously in the rule and with the supporting materials since then, and if we need to make some clarifications to help the industry, the entire community understand it and understand how best to improve it and change it and expand it over time.
And thank you, Al. And one thing I'll just add to that, for those of you who are interested in digging deeper, is the all of the submitted data classes and elements have been posted on the website. So one should not just look at what was included in draft V2 or what was leveled as level 2, but there's a lot of rich data classes and element suggestions in level 1 and in the comment level. And I think you'll see that a lot of work has gone into making these proposals on the part of industry stakeholders, and then a lot of work has gone in from the ONC team in terms of determining what the technical readiness of each of these is. So the hope is that you know, we will continue to see this move forward year by year as the cycle continues.
That looks like the last question, and I don't see any other hands up.
Yeah, I don't see either. One last pass, yeah, maybe?
Michelle,
anybody
was,
else?
Yeah, Michelle was our last person.
Okay. All right. Should we go to the next one then, Denise?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Fantastic.
Thank you.
All right. Leslie, thank you. Dr. Lane, thank you. Leslie, great seeing you again, and welcome back into the fold in the action. For those of you who don't know Leslie, she's an amazing patient advocate. I know we said it before, but I'm so glad to have her back a part of this effort. So it's fantastic. All right.
Thanks,
so next up is the ISP Task Force with Ariane and David. Hats off to you.
All right. Very glad to be here. Hopefully you can hear me. Wait, there, I need to click that button to be able to be seen. There I am. David, do you want to introduce yourself?
Good morning, everybody. David McCauley. I recognize and know a number of you, but some of you I haven't met yet. I'm a fairly recently retired healthcare executive, worked at Cerner for about 30 years, and was a previous member of this task force. And I think through some process that I don't understand, I got promoted to co-chair. But I'm happy to contribute if possible.
We refer to this task force as Team OG. So if we go to the next slide. So this is actually a good follow-on from USCDI. We'll talk about the goal of the ISP, but you know, really, this is the ISP is about setting. If we think about the USCDI as data classes that are about to enter into the floor, ISP is about raising the ceiling. Here's our task force. Great group, both of members from the HITAC as well as members from the broader community. I think we've got one more outreach to see if we can we can find one additional person, but I think we've got a fantastic group that is represents both the mainstream health information technology community as well as folks who are representing some of the frontier about where standards are going. If we go on to the next slide. So the mission and charter of the ISP is grounded in the Cures Act, in particular the notion that the national coordinator should identify priority uses and make recommendations for technology standards and implementation specification priorities. And our task force is intended to serve Mickey and the national coordinator and ONC in identifying the next frontier of standards. So if we go on to the next slide, our goal here, timeline. We're on a pretty compressed time frame. So it's already not February. We launched, we have yet to begin meetings. We're beginning meetings this week. So we're going to be meeting through March, April, May, and then conclude in June with updates to priorities back to the HITAC. So this is sort of a pre-meeting announcement, mission and role announcement to the HITAC. We will be working in conjunction with the HITAC to update our group on the direction that the task force is going to make sure that we're lining up the priorities of the task force with national priorities. If we go on to the next slide, here's our meetings. Maybe next slide. We have a lot of them. We're going quickly. We go one more. There we go. Oh wait. Oh, okay. So maybe I missed the slide where we talked about what our mission is, but really our intent is to update the ISA and identify interoperability needs in the ISA in order to update, as I said, the frontier of interoperability. We're following on the great work of the last incarnation of the ISP task force that identified interoperability needs in the area of orders and resulting, in the area of 360 care coordination, and then had identified a set of priority needs for the next incarnation of the task force. That was in the before time. So maybe I'll turn it over to David for some of the conversations that we've been having in terms of where we might want to go relative to where we are right now after the past year of experience and identifying where in a public health crisis standards did and did not work. So maybe David, if you can update the HITAC on some of our speculation in terms of where we might address standards priorities given the last year.
Yeah, thanks. It was somewhat sobering to go back and look at the output, the final report of our task force that finished in 2019 and look at what we thought was important at that time and what we recommended that we should work on next, and then sort of next didn't happen, 2020 happened instead. So now we're back and you go back and look at the stuff that we thought was likely to be important and you find some pretty obvious gaps based on what we've all gone through in this bizarre 2020 year. So I think one of the things the task force will want to get a handle on quickly is to what degree do we, in a sense, interrupt the trajectory that we had established in the past to deal with the emergent issues from 2020. And obviously, there's a lot of things that we could look into. One of the priorities for the task force is to identify new priority use cases for health IT. And I think some new cases that no one had envisioned have emerged in the last year. So we may want to take a look at some of those. I'll just throw one out as an example, vaccination, proof of vaccination, vaccination passport. There's work underway by a variety of industry groups to try to create some standards to make that an interoperable process. Is that something that the task force should take on, identify, and push back to you all? So there's a lot of coordinating work that we'll have to do in our early meetings to try to get in sync with what's already underway and where we don't need to put our toes, and then maybe find some places where we should put our energies and expertise to work. But I think that'll be a main driver. And if it turns out that we aren't needed in that space, if that input is not useful to ONC or HITACH, then we have plenty of queued up issues from our work in 2019 that we can pick back up and move forward. Arian, did I cover what you had in mind there?
That's fantastic. I'd say another obvious area that happened in COVID times that I think actually has some more general relevance is the work that the UK did in the recovery trials. It seems like the US is a machine when it comes to sponsored trials and running through investigational new drugs and biologics. But the kind of natural history and real-world evidence trials that were done in the UK around COVID, even though we have arguably a better HIT deployment and EHR deployment, that's an area that we just weren't able to get done at the same cadence as the UK. So that may be another obvious area for us to look. There's just the problem with the ISP task force is that there are so many obvious areas where, as a nation, we could be doing better in our interoperability despite all the progress that we've been making. That the challenge for us is to pick a couple of areas to really go deep on and make sure that we're providing good guidance to ONC and also to make sure that we're lining up with both national priorities and the regulatory and non-regulatory areas of interest that ONC, CMS, and potentially Congress have with regard to funding mechanisms and certification mechanisms, regulatory mechanisms, and just the power of the bully pulpit with the national coordinator in the White House. So I think with that, we will conclude our notion that we're reforming the ISP. Our first mission will be to identify those priorities. Maybe we open it up to the HITACH for commentary on both the role of the ISP and then any feedback that the task force has, sorry, that the committee has in terms of the formulation of the ISP. As we identify priority areas for the ISP, we will come back to the full committee, presumably next month, and update the committee on the ideas for selection of priorities that we come up with.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yep.
All right, Arian. So I think with that, you guys are ready for some questions. Am I right?
Absolutely.
All right, yep. Let's shoot. So first up in the queue is Mr. Stephen Lane.
Thank you so much, Arian and David, for taking on the leadership of this important task force. You guys look like you've assembled a great group of folks, and it's nice to see that there's a fair degree of co-membership between the USCDI and the ISP task forces, I think, which will facilitate coordination between our efforts. One thing I just wanted to mention in terms of priorities, it really goes back to Mickey's initial comments, which is the critical importance of addressing you know, this and potentially future pandemics and the needs related to public health interoperability. We're all painfully aware of the challenges that we've faced over the past year and the need to clarify how that interoperability is going to be supported by standards, you know, both data standards, transport standards, et cetera. I think, you know, the needs related to bidirectional interoperability, certainly between providers and public health, but also other stakeholders, including patients, members of the community, really, you know, can't be overemphasized. So I hope that the task force is called upon to integrate with the work that is going on across HHS entities and the White House, so that we can avail ourselves of the tremendous insight and expertise that your group brings to the table.
Thank you for that. I'd note that in our last incarnation of the ISP task force, when we looked at orders and results, we discovered that we actually had a ton of standards and a ton of content standards and a ton of transport standards. And then, you know, a lot of our recommendations were how to make the ecosystem work better. I suspect that if we get into, for example, the immunization reporting and immunization query problem, I had the pleasure of being on a CDC task force in, I think, 2011, where we talked about transport standards for immunization reporting and query. And, you know, we actually had a fair amount of standards in play at the time. We're going to discover some of the same issues, that we've got a lot of standards, but not a lot of wiring across the board. And that may be an area for investigation, both in terms of standards gaps, but also in terms of how to better wire those standards across the board. We have other questions.
And I'll just add to that, that I have to remind myself that the mandate in the Cures Act is to identify priority uses of health IT, which is broader than just the standards. Highlighting what we might find to be some underappreciated priority uses could be one of our main drivers.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, let's see. Anybody? All right, so I actually have a question here, and actually a question and a comment for you. So number one, thank you. It was great leadership. I look forward to you guys both stepping up and leading this forward. But so I'll start with a comment. I appreciate the nomenclature of the OG committee. It reminds me of my age. That's excellent. And I look forward to seeing the results of this and the collaborative work of all of us. But I would say the question I have is related to health equity. And as the ISP task force looks at various scenarios, you talk about immunization registry, you talk about other things. You know, something we are struggling with here and Central Texas particularly is the disproportionate amount of folks that just don't have access to their health information in an equitable manner. And so I would just ask the ISP task force, try to look at the various scenarios and what has the best bang for the buck broadly so that we can try to help underrepresented areas of the country and of respective states. Here we're trying to do a massive boots on the ground effort of understanding where some of these locales are and these different demographics, but it's become a critical priority for us to make sure that people are able to get their data the right place, right time, where they want it. So I would ask that the ISP task force try to look at those scenarios and say, are there elements here that would help everybody and really help to level the playing field as much as possible from an information access perspective?
Fantastic point. And I'd add to that when we were doing the work at the Duke-Margolis Center for Interoperability back in May or April, one of the priority areas there was really basic block and tackle work of making sure that we had demographic information coming in orders and results. That could then inform public health reporting for reportable labs, in this case for COVID labs, and also to make sure that we had actionable demographic information so we could look at disparities. If I look at, for example, Alameda County, you know, we've got areas in our county that are almost COVID-free. And then we've got areas in our community that have been really disproportionately affected by the disease burden of COVID. And that disproportionate burden follows socioeconomic and racial disparities that we have in this country. So definitely endorse that notion that we should be looking at equity and also, you know, basic information that allows us to better target vaccination, therapy, testing, some of these other measures. And again, I think that's a mission that transcends public health or public health kind of writ narrowly in terms of disease response into public health writ broadly in terms of improving the health of communities.
Makes sense. All right, next up on the queue is Cynthia.
Hello, everyone. It's an honor to have Mickey at the helm, and as we move forward into the addressing the needs of our American public in getting access to their health data. I guess I would just pose this as a priority, and I know that there was an excellent job focusing on the sharing among providers and the collecting of data from the public, the public aggregation of data for addressing the COVID pandemic. And I think the delay on the interoperability rules has also in some way harmed patients getting access to this critical information. And I guess I would just ask the committee to look at really putting the patients first in an incredibly supportive way of looking at enabling the American public to timely and efficiently get access to the third-party applications that can provide a synthesis of data. And I know our priority has been with providers and networks and being able to share this data. However, at the end of the day, for telemedicine, which is a new great silver lining from this horrid pandemic that we now have embraced much broader access through telemedicine. But I think for people to get the best of care and the best of diagnoses, they really have to have smartphone access readily available at their fingertips to their complete health information anywhere they get care. And sad to say that even I have moved, you know, been on this committee for over 4 years. I've moved to a different state and I'm waiting to get access to my records in paper form because they still can't get transferred. And I find that quite ironic because here we are, and sometimes we forget how expeditiously this committee could work to deliver access to the patient and the public and also provide education to the patient and public that this access will be readily available to all people. And so I think that will address the equity because most people do have access to smartphones today or have relatives that do. And when the patients can be in control of getting access, they can have relatives stand in for them, even if they don't, an elder person who might not have the capacity to use a smartphone anymore does oftentimes have a team of relatives. And so that open access is really going to be critical to people being able to prevent crisis in their health and to protect their health as we move forward. So I guess I would just say to their committee, let's remember to put the patient first in all of this and expeditiously in this time of coming back from this pandemic, enable the patient to truly get the ability to go anywhere for their care. And if you think about it, it's absolutely absurd that we have narrow networks. It's absolutely absurd that people can't get access to get care anywhere in this country. We live in a very big country. People live in a transient world, and we're so narrowed in our access and ability because of the crisis of lack of information and the crisis of lack of coverage in remote locations in our outside of where our domicile or our work headquarters is. So that said, I just want to support that we put the patient first. And I'd like to also hold a flag and a ticker for ONC to also think about expeditiously putting standards in place that are financial standards so that we can readily see this hospital pricing information. There are 357 different file types that have been published so far by hospitals in conforming to the healthcare price transparency rules, so one could appreciate a standard for not only pricing, but also billing and the provenance of billing and pricing given as access to patients. Because today, when patients are erroneously charged, they have absolutely no recourse because they have no digital record of any price or a digital record of the billing or their explanation of benefits. So we can play that role, and I think expeditiously the American public deserves it. So I just would encourage all of us to look forward to deliver to the patients timely what is practical and common sense and available in every other market of our economy. So thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Great comments there. And again, I think we have a great membership of this task force that represents digital health and the consumer perspective, the patient perspective, as well as the sort of traditional health IT perspective. So definitely appreciate your comments.
All right. So next in the queue is Mickey.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I just had two things. One, I just wanted to reinforce the point you made earlier, Aaron, about equity considerations and just, you know, encourage all of us to be thinking about health equity by design so that it's not, you know, sort of a tack-on. And I think that, you know, that cuts across policy, technical, business, functional considerations. And I think that, you know, that this task force, for example, as Arian describes, is, you know, sort of setting the ceiling here, that we should be thinking about how all of that gets baked in. And in lots of ways, it's not obvious, right? I think there's just implicit, you know, bias, as we know, in almost everything we do. And again, I just wanted to reinforce that point because I think it is really a really important one. The second is also just wanted to reinforce, you know, both Arian and David's points about, you know, how we think about prioritization because there are so many different dimensions of it. You know, as we think about, you know, sort of the current needs of the pandemic, which is a very unusual situation, but it's very real, as we know. So there's, you know, what can be done in the near term? What's, you know, sort of the near term investment toward the long term? And how do we, you know, sort of think about that judiciously? Also recognizing what, you know, what the role of that, you know, that we can expect out of high tax versus, you know, implementation focused things. So bringing all of that to bear, I think, is going to be important. And but I have great confidence that both David and Arian and the task force are very well prepared in expertise and experience to balance all those various considerations. And really looking forward to, you know, to working with you all.
Thanks, and thanks for the confidence.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. All right, so I know we have a few more folks in queue, and so I'm going to ask Clem and Carolyn if we could hold your questions just so we stay on time, we get through the rest of the agenda, we can come back right after public comment and make sure that your two questions are answered just so that we can keep the schedule here. So I would appreciate it if we could just hang on to them, just write them down real quick so we don't forget the questions, and I promise you we'll come back so you both can ask from Arian and Dave any questions that you have. All right, so with that, let's go on then here. And Denise, you want to introduce the next one?
Yes, thank you. So we have Talisha Searcy from the ONC today presenting on a data brief from ONC on the use of certified health IT and methods to enable interoperability by U.S. non-federal acute care hospitals, and this is a 29 report. So I'll turn it over to Talisha.
Great. Can everyone hear me? Perfect.
Yes.
So thank you so much. First, I want to thank the High Tech. I came to you back in late October, feels like ages ago, and talked through some preliminary measurement constructs and a framework that we're working on to assess interoperability under the 21st Century Cures Act. And I just want to start by thanking you all for the feedback that you've provided. And so today, as was mentioned, I'm going to walk through some results from our latest data brief. We work with the American Hospital Association on a health IT, annual health IT supplement survey. And the results that I'll talk to you about today are from 2019, but we're actually collected. The surveys were collected during the first quarter of 2020, so from January until about April of 2020. So the results that I will share shed some light on the technical capabilities that non-federal acute care hospitals had at the start of the pandemic. So I do like to level set that a little bit so that as we're kind of talking through the results, that kind of gives you a framework in which to keep in mind. Next slide, please. Perfect. So ONC has been measuring interoperability based on four domains. The first is whether or not the hospital reports that it has the capability to electronically send summary of care records to organizations or entities outside of their own electronically. Are they able to receive those summary of care records back from outside organizations electronically? Are they able to query or search for patient health information outside of their own organization? And then lastly, do they have the ability to integrate information from summary of care records into their EHR without the need for manual entry? So send, receive, find, and integrate are the four domains of interoperability that we've been measuring, quite frankly, since 2014. And so what you see here is that rates of interoperability are increasing, but it's important to keep in mind that one area that has lagged for a number of years has been integration or data integration. We've seen a substantial increase from 2018 of about 15%, and today of about 70% of hospitals reported that they are integrating data into their EHR. But only about 55% report that they're able to do all four interoperability domains, so send, receive, find, and integrate. So that's important to keep in mind. Next slide, please. So we've heard, and folks have mentioned quite a bit about understanding equity and disparities. And so what this slide is designed to show is one, about 9 in 10 hospitals nationwide had a 2015 edition certified EHR in 2019. However, we have seen disparities in terms of that adoption. So small hospitals are less likely than large or medium hospitals to actually have a 2015 edition product. And what is not shown here, but it is highlighted in our data brief and an appendix table, is also that fewer independent, small, rural, and critical access hospitals had a 2015 edition EHR compared to their counterparts in 2019. So again, while the overall numbers are pretty high, we do see a disparity in terms of those facilities that are smaller in rural communities and likely lack resources to upgrade their technology. Next slide, please. So one of the things that we wanted to do is also do a deeper dive into the methodologies that hospitals are using to send and receive information. So we wanted to do a bit of a deeper dive. And so we categorized those methods into three buckets. One is non-electronic methods, so mail, fax, e-fax. The second is electronic methods not using a third party or a network. So that kind of relates to the HL7 interface and whether or not you're able to view into someone else's system. And then third are electronic methods used using a third party or a network. So those are HIPs that enable direct uses direct, whether or not you're connected to a state, local, or regional HIE. So we kind of tried to understand the methodologies that folks are using to send and receive data. And what we found is that the HIPs were the most common electronic methods for sending and receiving summary of care records used by hospitals in 2019. And that was closely followed by state, regional, and local HIEs. One thing that is important to keep in mind is that we still see a high number of hospitals that report that they are sending and receiving information using those non-electronic methods, and we'll do a deeper dive on the next slide in terms of what that means. But it is important to keep in mind that there is an increase in the use of some of those third-party networks. Next slide, please. So again, we saw in the prior slide that folks are using various methods to send and receive data, but they also were still using these non-electronic methods. And what we found was a majority of hospitals reported taking a mixed approach by using electronic and non-electronic methods for exchanging summary of care records in 2019. So what you see here is that the electronic-only method has been relatively flat over the last few years, but we do see particularly as it relates to receiving an increase in the number of hospitals that are reporting that they're taking a mixed approach. Next slide, please. So similarly, we did that deeper dive into the methodologies of sending and receiving electronic health information. Now we also did a deeper dive into the methods of electronically querying for patient health information. And what we found is that the proportion of hospitals that use national networks to find or query increased by nearly 40%. Now I'm going to draw your eye to the bottom part of this chart, which is where we see a lot more of that movement. So the national networks that enable record location across different EHR vendors, such as Commonwealth, we see an increase there. And in 2019, about 44% of non-federal acute care hospitals reported that they are doing that. And then also we see about 53% of hospitals report that they're using state, regional, or local HIEs. So those are some of the things that are important to keep in mind, especially as we're moving forward on things such as TEFCA, in terms of how the really important role that HIEs are playing in exchange of information. Next slide, please. So similarly, again, we wanted to see, all right, so we've seen folks use tons of methods for sending and receiving. We see that there's a lot of methods that people are using for the purpose of query. We wanted to get a feel for, on average, what's the average number of methods that hospitals may be using to send, receive, and query for patient health information. So really try to get a grasp of what you need in order to be interoperable, right? And what we found was in terms of sending, hospitals used about over three methods on average to send information, and then about three methods to receive information, and on average over between two to three methods to query for patient health information. So you can see that they're using different approaches and they're having to use multiple approaches in order to make sure that they have access to the information that they need electronically available. Next slide, please. So when we did a deeper dive into querying, we also found that the number of national networks that people are a part of has increased between 2018 and 2019, with nearly half of hospitals participating in more than one national network in 2019. And so when we do that deeper dive, you see that about 41% of hospitals report that they're using those single EHR vendor networks, so like Epic Care Everywhere. But we also see that about 38% report that they're using Direct Trust. So folks are taking, using various methods, and they're usually using more than one to engage with national networks. Next slide, please. So in addition to those national networks, more than half of hospitals participated in both the national network and the state, regional, or local HIE. So again, that goes into this needing to kind of layer over and over and over again in terms of different methods in order to make sure you have access to the information that you need. And so what we found was that about 7 in 10 hospitals reported participating in a national network, and that's a 21% increase in 2019. And then 1 in 10 hospitals did not participate in a national network or a state, regional, local HIE. And so that's a statistical difference from 2018 as well. But again, it's important to keep in mind that on average, we are seeing an increase in folks that are participating in both. Next slide, please. So again, we wanted to understand whether or not there are disparities that exist. We talked earlier about disparities that may exist from the perspective of access to the 2015 edition EHR, but we wanted to do a deeper dive into whether or not similar disparities exist in terms of participation in a national or a state, regional, or local HIE. And what we found was that the proportion of small, rural, and critical access hospitals that participated in both a national network as well as a state, local, or regional HIE was lower compared to their counterparts. And so you could see that there's lower rates of participation across all domains, from participating in solely a state, regional, or local network, as well as participation in a national or participating in both. And that's true for small, rural, and critical access hospitals. Next slide, please. So we also wanted to take a look at what are some of the barriers to interoperability or barriers to exchange that hospitals reported experiencing in 2019. And some of these are the same as what we've seen over time and what this what the HITECH has been grappling with for some time. The highest, with more than 70% of hospitals reported challenges, and that's engaging in exchanging data across different vendor platforms, so that cross-vendor exchange, and that's that lower category here. And so I should say, just to make sure everyone is oriented to this table, because there's a lot here, we looked at barriers in terms of three buckets. So the first are barriers related to electronically sending patient health information. The second bucket are barriers related to electronically receiving patient health information. And then the last bucket are other barriers related to exchanging patient health information. Now, some of the higher points are actually, and the highest is in that third bucket, right? And that relates to some of the technological challenges that hospitals reported to exchange. And so those exchange challenges across different vendor platforms is problematic at about 73%. But when we look at that second bucket related to barriers to electronically receiving patient health information, one barrier that was reported at about 66% was hospitals reported that there are providers that they share patients with that don't typically exchange patient data with them. So they know that they're exchanging patients, but they don't exchange data with that facility. So that's important to keep in mind, especially as we start to think about aspects of information blocking, one from the cross-vendor exchange aspect, but also as it relates to provider business model kind of aspects of information blocking. So these are some important things to keep in mind. And then I'm kind of working in this table up. So the first two rows in that first bucket, barriers related to electronically sending patient health information, two things I want to bring your attention to. One is hospitals reported difficulty in finding providers' direct addresses at about 58%. And another big thing, which I think is also exacerbated by the pandemic, but exchange partners, EHR systems, lack the capability to receive data. So that would mean, hey, I want to send information to some other entity outside of my own, but they don't have the capability to receive data. And so that could include, those exchange partners could include public health entities, behavioral health providers, mental health service providers, different providers, or other primary care providers that the hospital wants to send information to, but they don't believe that that system has the ability to take that information back. So next slide, please. So in summary, just want to kind of highlight the key points. About 70% of hospitals reported integrating data into their EHR at nearly 15% increase from 2018. A majority of hospitals used a mix of electronic and non-electronic methods to exchange summary of care records. However, the use of electronic third-party methods, so HISP, HIEs, and vendor networks increased in 2019. And the proportion of hospitals that used a national network to query for information increased by nearly 40% between 2018 and 2019. So again, this is just one data brief. We have tons of other analyses that we are conducting right now. We're doing additional analysis related to hospitals particularly as it relates to questions in that survey on public health exchange. So we are happy to come back to you and provide results on public health exchange and patient access capabilities. We also work with partners at the National Centers for Health Statistics on surveys of office-based physicians and their rates of interoperability, as well as we partner with the National Cancer Institute looking at patients or individuals' access to their portal, as well as any challenges that they may experience in terms of exchanging data. So happy to answer any questions that you have. Also happy to come back and share additional analysis as needed.
All right. So Denise, I know we either keep to time here. So Denise, I think we should ask this question of you. Do you think we should go to public comment and then come back to questions so that we can keep the time of public comment?
Yeah, public comment is supposed to be in just a couple of minutes. So maybe we should go to that. And then I know Carolyn's still in the queue from the ISP presentation, and John Kansky has his hand up, probably related to the topic that was just discussed.
Yeah. So if the high-tech members can appease us and allow us to keep the time sort of precise with the public, we will come back to you immediately thereafter and let you all ask your questions. So appreciate you holding for just a brief moment.
And thank you, Talisha, if you can just hold on to while we do public comment.
Yes. That was great stuff, Talisha. Thank you. Mike, you may be on mute, my friend.
I am on mute. Thank you. Thank you. Anyways, we are getting ready to go to public comment, and I'd like to ask the operator to open up the line.
Thank you. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Hey, thank you. Aaron, Denise?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we're going to start then, since you're on, we'll start with your presentation most recently. And so I see Stephen, I actually see Carolyn. I don't know, Carolyn, if it was your hand raised for both ISP and this one you wanted to make comments on?
No, just for the previous presentation.
Okay. All right. So we'll hold on for 1 minute there. We'll go. So Stephen Lane?
Actually, Aaron, I think John was in.
Oh, was John in? I missed him.
I thought John was in first, and then he dropped, and then he came.
Then he came back? Okay, so then John, you're next.
Yeah, I hate to cut in front of my friend Stephen, but I'll be brief. So great information, very useful, and I'd say most of the trends are everybody would like them to go faster, but they're encouraging. The point I wanted to make, which I think is not obvious, there may not be a uniform agreement on, but dorks like me that run a health information exchange and obsess about interoperability at a local and national level have run across something. There was an observation in the report that organizations are using more than one method to achieve interoperability. People might think, oh, dang, that's too bad. We need one on-ramp or just one way to get all of our interoperability needs. And while that sounds elegant, I think that's not accurate. So I don't find it discouraging at all that organizations are doing more methods or using multiple methods to achieve interoperability, because interoperability, I'm air quoting and you can't see me, is a more complicated beast than we like to just define it in conversation. So, in other words, in summary, for a complicated organization or even a medium complicated organization to achieve all, it's probably going to need multiple methods, and that's okay. It's even good. Thank you.
That's exactly correct. I can tell you that here we connect to multiple data sources because we have to. We do everything, our providers do everything they can to get a complete record before doing anything. So I can echo those comments firsthand. All right. Next then is Dr. Stephen Lane.
Thank you. I really wanted to thank Talisha and her team for the great work that they continue to do in measuring interoperability. We certainly cannot advance this goal if we don't have good solid measurements around it. So thank you for that. I wanted to call out what I consider to be a little bit of misinformation on Talisha's slide 8, where she refers to care quality. For one thing, she refers to it as being Sequoia Project's care quality, which it is not. Those companies were separated a couple of years ago, and care quality, you know, stands on its own feet today as an independent company. And also, and by the way, I do serve as the chair of the steering committee for care quality, so I have some knowledge of this. And also refers to care quality as a national network, which it is not. Care quality is a framework that allows national networks to connect to one another and exchange data. So the other national networks, the Health Exchange, Epic's Care Everywhere, Commonwealth Health Alliance, those are networks, and they exchange with one another using the framework of care quality. And I just think we need to make that clear for the public record. You know, if you think about it in the context of the TEFCA work that ONC is undertaking, you know, care quality really serves in that role as the coordinating entity, whereas those networks that need to connect to one another would be more akin to the QHINs that we've discussed many times here. So just want to make sure that's clear. Thank you.
That's great. That's
an important clarification, Stephen. Thank you, because I often see that myself, where care quality is referred to as a network, and I'm always saying, no, it's a framework.
So, thank you so much, Stephen. This might be a byproduct of the survey lag a little bit, because we also needed to compare 2018, which means the survey was developed in 2017, but we will make sure that distinction is clear in future surveys, so thank you.
Great work.
Yeah, great work. And that's hard. It's hard to gather and explain in a concise survey, choose A, B, C, or D kind of thing. So kudos on your best, Talisha. I'm sure it'll get better as you go on. Okay. I don't see any other hands for Talisha's presentation.
No, we just have Carolyn.
Yeah, we have Carolyn for ISP. Yep, we will get. I just want to make sure that we're good with Talisha's presentation. Is there any other questions on that one? Real quick, we'll get the ISP. All right. So kudos again, Talisha, and kudos to the partnership there with AHA and other organizations of gathering that data from hospitals and from CIOs. So great job. All right, now to the ISP question. So Ms. Carolyn Peterson, please, your question.
Hey, thanks, Aaron. It's not so much a question, but rather a follow-up comment. I know Cynthia talked quite passionately about the importance of patient access to their information and mentioned in particular the value of being able to access that over a smartphone. I just want to make note that individuals have a range of abilities to using different devices, and that whatever approach we take needs to be fully accessible and to support individuals using information in different ways, not just with a smartphone, as well as also usable through excellent usability, again, for all users. There is sometimes a financial issue also for some individuals, and that smartphones can add an additional cost to that form of use, and it's important to keep these things in mind as we develop systems that work for all patients. Thank you.
Well said. Very well said, Carolyn. A real-world example is we employ a QR code for all of our vaccine hub stuff. People can walk in with on their smartphone. You'd be amazed at how many folks walk in without that because they don't have a device, and we have to print up a QR for them to scan when they go through the line. So you're exactly right. All right. John, did I see your name, your hand up? John Kansky, did I see your hand up for ISP as well? No? Okay.
Nope, sorry, Aaron.
I think all hands are down.
I think all hands are down? Okay. All right. So I'll just open up the floor here. We've got about 8 minutes left before we adjourn. Are there any other comments or questions across the entire, all the presentations we've seen today, all the feedback that HITECH wants to, any HITECH member wants to raise their hand on? Okay, Denise, do you want to start an opening or closing remarks? Do you want to start?
Well, I just want to thank our task force co-chairs for presenting today, and Talisha as well. And I know we have a lot of work underway. I think that our next meeting will probably have a longer agenda. I know it's nice to have a short meeting once in a while, but we certainly have a lot of work going on, and I think we'll hear a lot more at our next meeting. Thank you.
Agreed. And I also want to say thank you to all of you today for the phenomenal presentations, data, the robustness of conversation. I know that there's numerous groups actively engaged in trying to move the ball forward, and I give credit to all of them that we all see every single day partnering with the ONC to drive things forward. So thank you for that. Also, special thanks to our national coordinator, Mickey Tripathi, for the phenomenal comments at the opening. They really set the tone for today. So I wish you all well, good luck, good health, stay safe. If you haven't got your shot, get your shot when you have a chance to. And you know, we will see you all very shortly again for the next meeting.
All right. Thank you.
All right. With that, thank you. Thank you all. Have a great day.